burning my fire.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Let's start today with a positive story that reminds us that sometimes activism and media pressure can actually have an effect. Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic Speaker of the House, has done a complete 180, and she is now supporting a ban on members of Congress trading individual stocks. Now, this doesn't mean it's actually going to happen. It doesn't mean it's actually going to pass. It may. We'll have to wait and see. But in just 2 short months, Nancy Pelosi, not because she wants to, but because she was embarrassed and pressured into it, has done a complete 180 and has gone from there's no reason members of Congress should be banned from trading individual stocks to I'd be open to it to let's actually go ahead and do it. So as a reminder, back in December of last year, just 2 months ago, Nancy Pelosi was asked about this, and she rejected the idea of a stock trading ban for members of Congress. Here's that clip.
Should members of Congress and their spouses be banned from trading individual stocks while serving in Congress?
No, I don't know to the second one. We have a responsibility to report in the stock on the stock, but I'm not familiar with that 5-month review. But if the people aren't reporting, they should be.
Why should they be banned?
Because this is a free market, and we are a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that.
So that was in December. Then we got to January, and in January, Nancy Pelosi said, "Well, I'm open to a stock trading ban from Congress. I have great confidence in the integrity of my members. They are remarkable. So when people talk about, well, somebody might do this and somebody, I trust our members." To give a blanket attitude of we can't do this and we can't do that because we can't be trusted, I don't buy into that. But if members want to do it, I'm okay with that. And then the latest news is that Nancy Pelosi is now pushing a stock trading ban for members of Congress. Axios reporting just hours ago, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is moving to ban stock trading on Capitol Hill after having consistently opposed such a measure. This adds unprecedented momentum to an issue that also has bipartisan support on the Senate side. Pelosi's imprimatur follows building momentum in both parties. Some progressive Democrats and MAGA Republicans have united on a proposal to ban sitting lawmakers from trading individual stocks. Pelosi, who expressed opposition in the past, and some other Democratic leaders have been slow to take up the issue, despite reported interest from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. So now the idea, as Axios says, is amend the Stock Act from 2012, which governs how members disclose purchase and sale of stocks, to eliminate the trading of individual stocks by members of Congress. This is very, very interesting. Now, this doesn't mean it will happen, but this is without a doubt the most momentum we've seen in this direction. And I think it has to be restated again and again. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to do this. Nancy Pelosi notoriously is involved in individual stock trading, options, puts. I mean, it's been widely reported. She doesn't want this, but it is because of pressure and essentially being embarrassed into having to be open to it that it has gained momentum. And that's something we all did and some media outlets have been doing. Now, this is not going to be you know, it's not there are some who are opposing this on the basis that it's some kind of oppressive, authoritarian, you know, whatever. If you choose to run for the House or Senate and you know, if I do that, I won't be able to trade individual stocks. I can still hold mutual funds. I can still own the stocks and put them in a blind trust. This is not super oppressive, guys. And it does make perfect sense because not only are you in a position to know ahead of time about events that could impact stock prices, the way we saw happen in that crazy couple week period at the start of the pandemic. And we saw Senator Kelly Loeffler and others dumping stocks and buying stocks and all these different things on the basis of what they presumably logically were told at some of these pre-COVID briefings. It's not just that you learn about things ahead of time. It's also that your decisions can impact the prices of stocks. Now, I think if we really want to be thorough, it's important to say, even without trading stocks, if at the time that you become a member of the House or Senate, you know what stocks you own, even if you can't trade them, you can still try to legislate in ways that would be advantageous to you, right? So imagine I enter the House and I know that I own, I don't know, a bunch of stocks of a bunch of shares of Google, for just to make it very, very simple. Even if I can't trade those while I am in the House or Senate, I could still push legislation or vote in a way that would bolster the value of the Google stock I know I have without trading it. So even this, which some are saying, oh, it's too much, it's too authoritarian, it's too crazy, it still leaves itself open to sort of abuse and manipulation due to the power that legislators have. But it would be a big deal. It would be a big deal. And so we're going to follow whether it actually happens. It really makes perfect sense. Many members of the House and Senate are in favor of it. And the truth is, I hate to say this, but some of them are in favor of it because they know that there's still a bunch of ways around it that they're going to be able to find. I mean, it's not just because they think it's the right thing to do. And it's not just because they would get the benefit of optics. It's also because many of them have a number of different ways around it. And the devil will be in the details. How is it worded with regard to blind trusts? How is it worded with regard to mutual funds? How is it worded with regard to the spouses or family members of those in the House and Senate? You know, Nancy Pelosi's husband has been a big element of focus when it comes to her stock trading. So many details to be sorted out, but it is a very... it's a welcome 180 from just 2 months ago. All right. On Monday, I told you some states are looking very strongly at going in the direction of considering dropping mask mandates, either indoor at businesses and or in schools. Over the last 48 hours since I came to you with that report, it is accelerating dramatically. More and more localities, more and more states talking about no more masks as of some date in the relatively near future. Could be February, could be March. And the question now is this the right time? Not everybody agrees that it is. I don't actually have an answer. And so anybody trying to read into whether I think it's time to end masking or not, I'm not completely sure. I think there's definitely a discussion to be had. Let's go through some of the news. WABC reporting. Indoor masking coming to an end in New York. Is it Hochul or Hochul? I never remember. Hochul expected to make an announcement Wednesday. It is anticipated that the governor of New York will announce the end of the indoor mask mandate in New York State on Wednesday, but the city mandate will remain in place. The state mandate requires masks to be worn inside businesses where vaccination status was not being checked. It is set to expire Thursday, and the New York Times reports that the governor will rescind it. Connecticut and New Jersey are already among a handful of states with plans to ease mask mandates in schools. The governor of New York has not made the same move. However, she held a call with school superintendents who believe an announcement is coming soon. The governor is expected to extend the mask mandate past its February 21st expiration and through winter break. Meanwhile, Illinois is expected to announce an end or rollback of certain mask rules. CNN reporting, the governors of New York and Illinois are expected to announce the end of or a plan to roll back certain COVID mitigation requirements involving masks today. I already told you about New York. In Illinois, Governor J.B. Pritzker will likely announce Wednesday a path for ending the state's indoor mask mandate in most public places. There is also increasingly pressure in Massachusetts on the governor, Charlie Baker, to make some kind of off-ramp type statement. Many cities and towns already going in that direction. In California, California's indoor mask mandate will end next week for vaccinated people, citing a 65% drop in COVID cases since the peak of Omicron. California will end its statewide indoor mask mandate for vaccinated individuals next week, Governor Gavin Newsom announced Monday. On February 15, California's statewide indoor mask requirement will expire. Unvaccinated people must still wear masks indoors. Less than 20% of the state's population remain unvaccinated, according to data. The Biden administration has not yet offered a plan or roadmap for how to handle this. So a couple different things here. Number one, not everybody agrees about this. One example is the former Surgeon General Jerome Adams. Now, Jerome Adams was not exactly the voice of reason when Donald Trump was president. So there are people who would say, I don't care what Jerome Adams says, but Jerome Adams tweeting, quote, "I respectfully disagree with many of my colleagues who are espousing the idea that prematurely dropping mask mandates will somehow make it easier to bring them back if and when things get worse again. How'd that work out when CDC said vaccinated could unmask last summer?" He went on to say, "How do I define premature? Well, by looking at spread, impact, and protection. Spread, 7-day average, still highest since April of last year. Impact, over 2,500 deaths yesterday. Protection, only 22% of those 5 to 11 and 56% of 12 to 17-year-olds are vaccinated. Exit the highway early, trip takes longer." I'm not sure if this is the right thing to do or not. On the one hand, Jerome Adams is right, which is the numbers are still not looking great. That being said, we know that the numbers significantly lag what is going on. There are states with cases down 85 to 90%. Vaccines are so widely available. The death rate is so incredibly low for the vaccinated that there becomes a question of what is the milestone? And if there is not a reversal, if we say, well, cases are down in the country about 70%. In some states, they're down 85 to 90%. If we give it one more month and that continues and there isn't a reversal, there really won't be anything else to wait for in the sense that it's not going away anytime soon. There's going to be a low level. Again, if in the next month there's not a new variant that causes cases to spike, in a month, cases will be really at what we might call an endemic level. Doesn't mean it, the cases are mild. It might or it might not, but we're talking about the case levels. There's a question of what would we be waiting for at that point in time? And there's not really a clear answer. And so that's where the, if not in 2 to 4 weeks, then when, becomes a relevant question. People who choose to remain unvaccinated do so at their own risk. And as always, the question then becomes, what about the immunocompromised? And that is a situation where those folks say, well, I've gotten vaccinated, but I still really can't do anything because I might still catch it and I'm at higher risk. And that's a serious question. I mean, a lot of those people haven't been doing anything anyway. So it is a sort of chicken egg thing where if the immunocompromised folks that have been staying home all this time are already staying home, then what is the reason to delay ending the mask mandates for those who are not staying home? It's complicated. I'm going to admit that it's very complicated. But the question I keep coming back to is, if not in a month, then what is the milestone that we are waiting for? And I've not heard a good answer to that, which suggests continuing on with some of this stuff. The schools question is a separate question, particularly when in schools you've got a population that has a lower vaccination rate. I'm thinking out loud along with you guys, and I know that in my audience there are people who are saying this is it. It's time for the personal responsibility phase. End everything and let people decide for themselves what level of risk to accept, like we do during flu season. Some people already would wear a mask during flu season or stay home. That's one side of my audience. The other side of my audience says, do nothing. We need to keep masking for at least the entire year. We should be closing schools. We should. So I know that there's different sides in my audience. And I'm curious to hear from you. Find me on Twitter at D Pacman and let me know what you think should happen now. I know most of you probably don't know this, but we are an audience-supported program, and I would love it if you supported us through our membership program at joinpacman.com. We have so many great membership perks, including a daily bonus show, which Alex Jones hates.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
We also have commercial-free audio and video streams of the show available for our members every day. And you get the show 6 hours earlier. You know how it normally at 9 p.m. Eastern, that day's full episode is out in video format. As a member, you get it at 3 p.m. Eastern, 6 hours earlier. Stunning, stunning stuff. And you can sign up at joinpacman.com. Today, I report to you maybe the most extreme salvo in the Republican Civil War that we have seen so far. Mitch McConnell abandoning the line from the Republican National Committee and referring to the Trump riots as a violent insurrection. So far, no response from Donald Trump. But Donald Trump, for months now, has been going after Mitch McConnell, attacking Senate Minority Leader, former Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, for not doing this enough and not doing that enough and not being grateful enough that Trump helped him get reelected and all these different things. And Mitch McConnell has now come out and said January 6th was a violent insurrection. Very different language than we've seen from the RNC. As The Hill reports, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell criticized the RNC for its censure of Congress people, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, and broke with their language on the Trump riots, calling it a violent insurrection. Violent insurrection. Let's take a look at the video. Here is Mitch McConnell asked about it, and in no uncertain terms, uses language that is not going to be pleasant for Trump or the RNC.
Censure two sitting members of Congress and also use the words legitimate political discourse in talking about January 6th.
Well, let me give you my view of what happened January the 6th. And we're here. We're here. We saw what happened. It was a violent insurrection for the purpose of trying to prevent the peaceful transfer of power after a legitimately certified election from one administration to the next.
Without a doubt, who can possibly say that what Mitch McConnell is saying is wrong? But Mitch McConnell is no hero. Right? I mean, Mitch McConnell declined to hold Trump accountable in the immediate aftermath of the event. Do you guys remember this? I know it sort of feels like it was a long time ago, and yet it feels very recent. But remember that when the second Trump impeachment happened, remember, Trump is a twice impeached former president. When the second impeachment of Donald Trump happened, Mitch McConnell said, listen, Trump was responsible. This was what it was. It was terrible. But impeachment is a limited tool, and Trump is not constitutionally eligible for impeachment conviction. He had the biggest cop out at the time where he said, well, yeah, he did it. He did the thing that we're accusing him of doing. But impeachment can only be used in very narrow circumstances. And this is not one of those circumstances. And so I must vote against conviction in the second impeachment of Donald Trump. McConnell is pathetic. He chose to protect the Republican Party instead of doing what was right for the country at the time. And now he says, well, yeah, it was a violent insurrection. So much like when George W. Bush drunkenly stumbled, I shouldn't say drunkenly. I know he used to have an alcohol problem. I meant metaphorically drunkenly stumbles. When George W. Bush inadvertently stumbles across the correct take on something related to Trump, we don't say, wow, what a good guy, huh? No, it's still war criminal George W. Bush. It's still the same George W. Bush that got us into two wars. and one on completely fabricated intelligence. I mean, it's still George W. Bush. And in the same way, we're interested in Mitch McConnell directly saying it's a violent insurrection. It was a violent insurrection. We're interested in it because it's completely at odds with Donald Trump. It is at odds with what the Republican National Committee decided at the recent meeting, and, you know, at odds with what they did with Congressman Kinzinger and Congresswoman Liz Cheney. And we're interested in it because it is fomenting the civil war, which hopefully will be destructive to the Republican Party in the midterms that are now just barely 8.5 months away. But it's not because we like Mitch McConnell. The guy is pathetic, and we shouldn't forget that. Now, the other amazing thing that happened yesterday is the Mitch McConnell clip we looked at earlier, where Mitch McConnell said January 6th was a violent insurrection. It was a response to House Minority Leader Republican Kevin McCarthy being asked about January 6th and saying that there was a legitimate political discourse there. This is I want to make sure you understand sort of the parallel of what's going on here. Rachel Scott, who is the congressional correspondent for ABC News, asked Kevin McCarthy about whether there was legitimate political discourse on January 6th. And McCarthy seemed to be saying that there was. OK, so here's the original clip. Here's the original clip from yesterday morning.
I think there was legitimate political discourse on January 6th.
Yeah, everybody knows there was. Anyone who broke inside.
Okay. So he says, when asked, was there legitimate political discourse on January 6th? He says, yeah, everybody thinks there was. And he seems to say even the people who broke in. He later put out a statement saying, no. The people who broke in were not engaging in legitimate political discourse. That is what then led Mitch McConnell to be asked. This is what Kevin McCarthy said. What do you think? And McConnell said it was a violent insurrection. Then this goes nuclear and it goes beyond parody. Later in the day, Rachel Scott goes back to Kevin McCarthy to try to ask again, did you really mean that the rioters were engaging in legitimate political discourse on January 6th? And McCarthy literally runs away. When we say Rachel Scott caught up with him, we're not using the term metaphorically. She literally ran and caught up with him. So I'm going to play this. I understand if you're just listening today, the visual element is a big piece of it. But McCarthy comes around the corner. This guy hasn't run this fast since he had to run away from the rioters on January 6th. Comes around the corner at a gallop. And then Rachel Scott tries to talk to him and he just says, it's not good to answer questions in hallways. You guys understand this. Hallways acoustically are terrible for answering questions. You really want to be answering questions in the bathroom. That's where questions should be asked and answered. Look at this.
You know what? Make an appointment office. Come on. It's not good to do anything.
Look at this guy. He just takes that corner. You know, if this were a motorcycle race, he probably would have lost traction coming around that corner. It's not good to answer questions in the hallway. And telling Rachel Scott to make an appointment, she did. And so far, she attempted to make an appointment. And so far, it has not been granted. McCarthy is the prototypical epitome of the politician with no redeeming qualities whatsoever. On policy, he's a disaster. On optics and his relationship with the media, he's a disaster. On having any kind of actual sort of like guiding principles as an individual, ethical principles, moral principles, completely and totally vapid. And just the epitome of the gross DC politician. And here turning the corner and running away, a very bad day for Kevin McCarthy, starting by saying the rioters were engaging in legitimate political discourse, then everything going haywire, McConnell turning around and saying legitimate political discourse. It was an insurrection, guys. That's what it was. Just not going super well for Kevin McCarthy. And what you have to understand is that this is not really a departure from how most of these people operate. They clearly have private sincerely held beliefs about what happened on January 6th. And I continue to believe most of their beliefs about what happened on January 6th are that Trump caused it and it was terrible and it was disgusting. I genuinely think most of them believe that. Maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't, you know, maybe Lauren Boebert doesn't, or Madison Cawthorn. Maybe they liked it. But most of these Republicans know Trump incited it and it was objectively a disaster for the Republican Party. Even a lot of the media people know it. Hannity, we know from the texts, Sean Hannity knew it was a disaster, but publicly he had to put a different spin on it. But publicly, they continue, some to struggle, some not to seem to struggle, and just say it was all fine and it was peaceful and all this different stuff. And for as long as they continue that, it reinforces this idea that they have no actual concern with anything other than self-preservation for their own seats and self-preservation for the Republican Party. That's all they care about at the end of the day. If you're listening today and you didn't see the clips I played, including Kevin McCarthy running away, we'll have them on our Instagram. You can find us at David Pakman Show on Instagram. See the clips. Let me know what you think. All right, this is a fascinating story about how backwards the American right wing currently is. I know many of you have been following the controversy with podcast host Joe Rogan. I've been on the Rogan program 2 times. I've also spent the last year calling out lots of the misinformation that has been divulged on the Joe Rogan program. Initially, the controversy with Joe Rogan was over COVID disinformation, including multiple guests making outrageous claims about vaccines and COVID, which I couldn't possibly list now, but it led to numerous musical artists, including Neil Young and Joni Mitchell and others, to pull their music from Spotify. And it led to Joe Rogan putting out a statement about the COVID misinformation, saying, "I'm not trying to spread disinformation. I'm not trying to be controversial. And I'm going to make an effort to have more people on with what we might consider sort of like the mainline medical science views." And some people felt the apology was forced. Some people felt the apology was disingenuous. Some people liked it, etc. Shortly after the COVID disinformation controversy, a compilation video of Rogan using the N-word on his show from the last decade plus came out. And it was a whole new controversy, including the artist India Ari, saying, "I'm pulling my music from Spotify," and Rogan doing another apology video saying, "Listen, when I watch this stuff, it's not good. I recognize it's not good. And I didn't have racist intent." And OK, he did another apology. Some people didn't like the apology. Some people liked the apology. Others said this is the right thing to say. Others said this is the wrong thing to say. The content of it is not actually at issue here. What is fascinating is that the right is now turning on Rogan because he apologized. Early on in this controversy, the right were the defenders of Rogan, saying it's great that he's putting out their alternative views about COVID and vaccines, even if they're completely not based in fact. This is a guy who, you know, don't cancel the race. The use of the N-word is fine. It's all fine. Rogan's great, great, great. Take $100 million to come to Rumble, we learned yesterday, all this different stuff. But now that Rogan has apologized, and I'll be honest, I think the apologies are sincere. It doesn't mean anything in particular about Rogan's intent when he said the stuff. I have no idea. But I do think his apologies are sincere, at least as far as he feels today. Now the right is turning on Rogan. First and foremost, Donald Trump putting out a statement saying Joe Rogan is an interesting and popular guy, but he's got to stop apologizing to the fake news and radical left maniacs and lunatics. How many ways can you say you're sorry? Joe, just go about what you do so well and don't let them make you look weak and frightened. That's not you, and it never will be. So Trump, not pleased with the apologies, but still sort of deferential to Rogan. But then all sorts of conservative media and elected officials saying Rogan is wrong to apologize. Let's look first at a clip of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis saying, no, the apology is bad.
The mob will come after people and they're targeting Rogan because he's threatening to upset the apple cart on some of the things that they're holding dear. And with COVID, he's just bringing opposing views. He's letting people decide. They say he's against vax. I've not listened to a show, But then I read he specifically advocated for people with comorbidities and elderly to get vaccinated. And so a lot of this is just, I think he's got a huge audience. I think a lot of the legacy outlets and I think the left fear the fact that he can reach so many people. And so they're out to destroy him. But
Now, the funny thing is, Rogan's audience, by most estimates, is down 50% since he moved to Spotify. So this fear about the audience is kind of a weird thing. But OK, DeSantis says the apology was wrong and Trump says the apology was wrong. But then look at what is happening on other conservative media outlets. Here is Steven Crowder weighing in on the apology stuff.
I'm not going to lie. I was upset.
Yes.
I was angry with with Joe as well. And I'll explain to you why. I'm more angry, of course, with the people who've tried to.
Yeah.
I hate to use the term cancel culture, but the people who've tried to destroy his life and his livelihood. Now, Joe Rogan is bigger than them, so good for him. It shouldn't affect him. I hope he understands the power that he has. Unfortunately, he's caved a little bit, and I just that makes it harder for everybody else. And I have a lot of respect for Joe. I think he's a good guy. I've spent some time with him. So it's always hard for me, just full disclosure, to be objective when I know somebody.
So anyway, there's Steven Crowder. Steven Crowder says Joe Rogan caved. Then we go next to Steve Bannon, Trump propagandist Steve Bannon, also not pleased. Let's listen to him.
Okay, welcome. You're in the War Room. It's Monday, 7 February, the year of our Lord, 2022. Now with closing in almost 140 million downloads on the podcast. And I just want to add, we did that without Spotify, and we did that without groveling to Spotify.
Uh-oh.
More on Spotify in the weeks, days and weeks ahead. But it is amazing. And note to Joe Rogan, the more you grovel, the more episodes they're going to take down.
So Joe Rogan being admonished by Steve Bannon for groveling. And then we also have Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck doesn't like what Rogan has done. And I think the audio comes in.
Him. First of all, Joe, never apologize. And I don't mean it like never apologize when you've done something that you find offensive or wrong. You should always apologize when you have done something that you're ashamed of. So apology accepted, apology warranted, perhaps.
Maybe
if you were using it in context, I don't think so. But
like,
maybe
should Joe Biden apologize for what he said in that? I don't think so.
No, I don't.
He was quoting someone. That's.
I don't know every word that Joe Rogan has said on the podcast. So maybe he has thrown it out there, 12 years ago, without context. You know what I mean? I don't know. So I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt and saying, if that was what happened, then you should apologize, but not to these people, not to these people. If you really did hurt and offend people with it, your audience would have told you that. You wouldn't be as successful as you are now.
This is just, it's just kind of weird. It's a weird argument that Glenn Beck makes because he wasn't as well known at the time that he did the segments that became part of that compilation. So I don't, the better question would be, if you said that stuff now, what would be the reaction from your much bigger audience? And I think it's very clear that much of the current audience would be offended. So anyway, the point here is what has gotten the right to now say, Joe, you're groveling. Joe, you're doing the wrong thing, is that he has apologized. An apology that I know many in my audience think is completely insincere. I've said this idea that an apology is not warranted here. Seems bizarre to me. And of course, if you believe that he was forced by Spotify to apologize in order to keep his show, that would be a reason to think the apology is disingenuous. But it doesn't appear to be the case. Spotify has said, we're keeping Rogan. We've pulled some episodes because of some of the content, but we like Rogan. We're keeping Rogan. And it is amazing how what has triggered the right is, a dozen uses of the N-word. No, they're fine with that. Total out and out COVID disinformation from guests that Rogan doesn't challenge. They say, no, he's giving alternate views. That's totally fine. The apology has catalyzed and coalesced Trump, DeSantis, Steven Crowder, Steven Bannon, Glenn Beck, and others who I'm not playing today to say now Rogan is doing the wrong thing. The apology is now the wrong thing. These people are truly incredible, and it just reminds us these are not good counterparts to any kind of real discussions about solving problems on the planet that affect humans and moving forward in a productive way. They're just not good faith actors. This video is, it's an SNL skit, except it's actually not. As many of you know, there has been this Canadian trucker convoy, and it has been infected by, but also to some degree organized by, a radical extremist fringe. The big picture of what's going on in Canada, and we interviewed Lance from the Serfs on a live stream earlier this week about it. This is according to Lance, 90% of Canadian truckers are vaccinated. But there is, I guess, in theory, some of that 90%, but really mostly from the 10% that is unvaccinated. They want to end vaccine mandates. Now, a reasonable question would be, well, which mandates? Because there are provincial vaccine mandates in Canada, in many, many provinces. But also to truck to the United States, the U.S. requires proof of vaccination. Even if you get your province to say you don't need to be vaccinated to do your trucking to the U.S., you'd still need to be vaccinated. Just one of the many questions here. And one of the things about it is that obviously not all the truckers who don't want the mandates are racist. Obviously. But some of the organizers have a history of white nationalism and racism. We heard from the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, who says we are calling this a far right convoy because from day one, the organizers themselves are part of the far right. They've been previously involved in far right movements. They've made Islamophobic comments in the past, et cetera, et cetera. So this is, I mean, you can't script this any better. Jesse Waters, newly minted as the host of, I think, maybe the 7 o'clock hour. Jesse Waters now has a show daily on Fox. He wanted to prove how not racist the truckers are. So he finds a Freedom Convoy trucker named Saba Vizi and brings him on to prove how not racist the truckers are. And the trucker says, I'm not racist. I have colored friends. Guys, it's beyond parody. Take a look at this. It sounds like an SNL skit.
It was only one guy, so we are not racist. I have all type of friends, color friends, Spanish, Chinese, you know. They are great people. There is no racism here.
Guys, I don't know. If he has colored friends, how racist could he really be? It's beyond parody. Now, to be fair, he clearly speaks English as a second language. So the use of the word colored could be a language issue, but the optics are absurd. And that being said, even if the use of the word colored comes from English being a second language, the concept of I'm not racist because I have black friends at this point could not possibly be more cliche. Jesse Waters looking to prove how not racist the truckers are and coming up with this bizarre, bizarre appearance that could just as easily have been from Saturday Night Live or Mad TV. The truckers are still going. They're still going in Canada. They're honking horns and doing other things. And my expectation is that probably in the next week or so, it'll all start to wind down. I don't believe they are going to have any success in eliminating the vaccine mandates. That's my sense as of right now. If you expect them to have any achievements as far as that goes, let me know. I want to hear from you. We're really learning a ton this week about how you can lie with graphs, lie with charts, lie with statistics. And we're learning all of it from Fox News. Earlier this week, I showed you a completely deceptive chart, which presented the opposite of the truth with regard to America's healthiest and unhealthiest cities. That was earlier this week. Today, I'm going to show you a clip which is really a masterclass in how to deceptively use statistics. Tucker Carlson hosted Charlie Kirk on his program. Charlie Kirk is sort of like a right wing indoctrinator of college kids, I guess is the way I would say it, through an organization called Turning Point USA. Now, Charlie Kirk has no medical knowledge or expertise whatsoever. And he appeared on the Tucker Carlson program and argued that vaccines might increase deaths. COVID vaccines might increase deaths. Now, before we even start the clip, I'm going to remind you that that's not true. It's not true. But look at how they frame the data to create that possibility. Okay, let's listen here.
So here's a shocking story. Look, you should care, no matter what side you're on, above all, about how Americans are doing. And one of the main measures of how they're doing is how long they live. If you're dying younger, there's a problem. And a lot of them are dying younger. This fact comes to us from the life insurance companies, which keep close track of that. I've noticed this according to their data. According to Scott Davidson, the CEO of One American Insurance, reported deaths in the age range.
By the way, no, One America Insurance doesn't have anything to do with One America News. Just so everybody's clear.
18 to 64, those are the working years, were up 40% in the third quarter of last year compared to pre-pandemic and pre-vaccine totals.
Now, remember, Davis 18 to 64, that's an important aspect of this.
Said, quote, "We are seeing right now the highest death rates we have seen in the history of this business, not just at One America. 40% is just unheard of." And again, these are the guys who do this for a living, and they're shocked. So the question, what's causing this? It's clear our leaders don't think COVID is to blame. Here's Stacey Abrams, maskless in front of a room full of masked children, and she has at least one very obvious comorbidity. Here's Barack Obama, maskless in the face of his masked servants as they build his latest mansion in Hawaii. So if corona's not causing these deaths, and it's not, what is causing these deaths? 40% increase. Charlie Kirk is the co-founder of Turning Point USA. He just wrote a piece on this.
That's why. First of all, why on earth would you have Charlie Kirk on to talk about this? It makes no sense at all.
We learned about it. He joins us tonight to assess. Charlie Kirk, thanks so much for coming on. What is this?
Thank you. We don't know. I mean, the one business that actually tells the truth regarding the death of Americans is life insurance. They have to get this right. They have entire teams of actuaries that study this data all day long. It's not the public health authorities that are warning this. It's a single CEO of a major life insurance company that says, hey, by the way, there's kind of a 40% increase in death. 10%, he said, would be a once in 200-year catastrophe. We have a 40% increase in death, and it's not because of COVID. And we deserve answers. And what's so amazing, Tucker, is that we've known this information and this data for a couple weeks now. Where are the politicians? Where are the leaders? Where are the people we put in charge to actually care about the well-being of our people? Well, at least we know how many times Joe Rogan used a bad word in a podcast the last 10 years. I guess we're getting our pronouns right for our six-year-olds, but we have a 40% increase in death amongst the supposed healthiest portion of the American population. This is a catastrophe. We deserve answers, and some would conjecture, hey, does this have something to do with the fact that we might have done a mass inoculation strategy? We know that there was deaths of alienation, suicide, and otherwise, but there's no answers. No one's talking about it.
So, I mean, isn't this the primary number they should be focused on? If you're in charge of the well-being of the American people and the death rate jumps by 40% in a cohort, you know, that's not supposed to die young, then, like, why aren't you hair on fire upset about it? I'm honestly confused.
Well, it's either they don't care or they don't know how to talk about it or they are too concerned about GDP numbers or stock market increases or immigration quotas or whatever. It's a mass casualty event. It's that simple. And the fact that the insurance company.
So listen, this is really a master class in deceptive use of statistics. So you really have to break this down in parts. He talks about the mass inoculation campaign. Maybe it's something we need to look at here. COVID vaccines protect you from COVID death. They're very, very good at that. But they say, well, vaccines happened and deaths went up. What's going on? Maybe the vaccines are part of this. You have to critically analyze the primary sources. And when you do, you realize that this has been studied extensively. First of all, It is the right that loves to say a lot of the people that supposedly died of COVID didn't really die of COVID. They died of something else. Now, you and I have already discussed, well, COVID can cause someone to die due to some intervening or intermediate condition. COVID, in many of the people that die, triggers a separate illness that eventually leads to death. It can cause cardiac issues. It can cause respiratory issues. It can all sorts of different things. They are the ones who were telling us a lot of the people supposedly dying of COVID aren't really dying of COVID. They're dying about other stuff. Here, there, some of those people are in these statistics. Some of these people are the people that the right wingers have been saying they shouldn't be classifying as dying of COVID because they're actually technically dying of other stuff. Well, that's what you're seeing in the data. When they say even not counting COVID, you see these people dying. It's the people you've been talking about that didn't, quote, really die of COVID. That's one piece of this. Second piece of this, we know that due to two things. One, for a while, all non-emergency care being delayed in the healthcare system. And number two, because a lot of people say, I don't want to go to a medical facility right now. I've got that ache. I've got that symptom. I'm going to delay this screening or that screening. We know that conditions, for example, like cancer, are on average being diagnosed later. When you diagnose cancer later, the treatment options are more limited, they're less likely to be effective, and your death rate is going to be up. So that's also a real thing here. And the irresponsibility of saying, I don't know, the mass inoculation campaign, we got to be thinking about it, is not only irresponsible, but I think they even know that it's not true. I don't think there's any way. Charlie Kirk, I don't know. But Tucker Carlson, there's no way Tucker Carlson thinks that the reason the death rate is up is because of vaccination. There's just no way. And they're jumping around. It's not even they're jumping three steps ahead. They're just jumping three steps in any direction and connecting things for which there are not actually connections. And it's irresponsible. And it's part of the continued disinformation that is being spread on Fox News. Speaking of Fox News, one other just little Fox News story. This is just kind of a funny thing. Greg Gutfeld is a Fox host, and he's going to be taping some shows in person. And if you want to go and be in the audience, you're going to have to show proof of vaccination. Now, you might be saying, well, David, maybe the venue requires it. Doesn't appear to be the case. This is very interesting. Media Matters has this the story. Gutfeld and his Fox News colleagues have repeatedly criticized vaccine requirements. Fox News and host Greg Gutfeld are putting on a week of shows in Texas that require attendees to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test. Gutfeld and his colleagues have repeatedly derided COVID requirements. Fox will be taping the weekday program Gutfeld at Gillies, Dallas, between February 21 and 25. The event page for the shows says, quote, proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test taken within 48 hours of the show will be required for admittance. Some other upcoming shows at Gillies, Dallas do not appear to have vaccination or testing requirements for entry. So it is not a requirement of the state and it is not a requirement of the venue. Now, it's fine for them to do this, but why are they deriding such requirements and measures constantly on their programs? Gutfeld, like many of his Fox Corporation colleagues, is vaccinated. Still, that hasn't stopped the network's personalities from frequently criticizing vaccines and attacking pro-public health measures like vaccine requirements. For example, Gutfeld said last August in New York City, Bill de Blasio introduced a vaccine passport. The new passport system calls for showing proof of vax to enter gyms, restaurants, and entertainment venues, which, judging by the stats I just mentioned, effectively bans most blacks, just like the Dems did to them during the Jim Crow days. So who is the Hitler now? If 70% of black New Yorkers are unvaccinated, they're the ones getting banned. Talk about white privilege. Folks, how do you take these people seriously when they're telling people COVID protocols are bad and discriminatory, and then they choose to enact the very same COVID protocols, the very same COVID protocols that they say are racist in some cases? And then the state of Texas doesn't require it. Gillies, Dallas doesn't appear to require it because other shows don't have these requirements. but the Gutfeld show requires it. And I agree with it. I agree with it. But the important point here is not only are they hypocrites, they are hypocrites in a way that is bad for public health until it affects them personally. Gutfeld probably doesn't want to be around unvaccinated people. It could be as simple as that at the end of the day that this comes down to. It's just pathetic. It's pathetic. And I don't think that they're going to change. They're going to continue saying what they need to say to placate their audience, but then doing what they know they actually need to do to be safe and to keep themselves safe. Not surprising. We have a voicemail number that you can call any time of day. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. This is a really interesting voicemail. This caller is a mental health professional. Now, I know some of you are going to hear the name Amanda Love, and you're going to say, that's the joke. You know, it's the joke. It's a man to love. No, this is really this person's name. We made sure that this is really a mental health professional. We found that they are a licensed mental health professional in their state. They are weighing in on what I said about at what point do we see these delusional Trumpists and say not to excuse their behavior and not to ridicule mental illness? At what point do we say this is mental illness? And Amanda, who called in and works in this field, has very interesting insights about it. Take a listen to this.
Hi, David. My name's Amanda Love, and I'm a mental health professional. I just wanted to follow up with you about when you're showing the Trump supporters and asking whether they might be actually mentally ill. And yeah, some of what I saw could be classified as delusional, which is falls under the psychotic realm of mental illness. Some delusions are fixed and pretty much impossible to eradicate, even with medication.
Indeed.
So yeah, I'm keeping a close eye on that too, because some of it is definitely mentally ill people that we're dealing with. In which case, you know, they're not being treated or whatever that case may be. But I appreciate everything you do, and I love all the information that you're putting out there. So thanks for what you do, and I'll keep watching.
Thank you. So listen, Amanda is not, I know I'll get emails, David, Amanda shouldn't really be diagnosing anybody over the internet. Amanda's not diagnosing anybody. What she's talking about is that generally speaking, some of the beliefs of these Trump supporters are what we would call delusional beliefs. These are delusional people that falls under the general category of psychosis. And as someone who, you know, I have many mental health professionals in my family, from licensed mental health counselors, psychologists, and psychiatrists, a lot of these beliefs are very resistant to revision from treatment with medication, and even from psychotherapy. These can be very stubborn and recalcitrant types of beliefs. Now, I think it is important to mention that a lot of these Trump people, you know, they believe the QAnon stuff. They believe Joe Biden was killed and replaced with a body double. They believe, you know, all of this different stuff. OK, with a lot of these people, it just so happens that their beliefs relate to Trump. And many of these folks, absent Trump, if Trump didn't exist, if Trump hadn't been president and it didn't start all of this chain of events that has taken place over the last 5 to 6 years, close to 7 years now, many of these people would still have delusional beliefs, but they'd be about something else. And this is something we've talked about with experts on cultish behavior, conspiracism, and believers in conspiracy theories. Typically, these are folks who are prone to these beliefs, and it's just sort of like what's in their environment that they get fixated on. And that's why you see sometimes the flat earth people also believe the Jewish conspiracies, Illuminati, and vaccine microchips, and on and on and on, because it's the same types of folks who are often prone or susceptible to these types of beliefs. So very interesting voicemail from Amanda. We're not diagnosing any particular individual here, just Amanda's general assessment of the delusional nature of some of these folks. This is not like, and I think, you know, to really underline the difference here, there is a difference between believing cutting taxes for the rich is good for the economy, right? There's, you can massage data to make that case, and then I can say no, but the data is inaccurate for this. If you believe Joe Biden was killed and replaced with a body double in order to steal the election from Trump, that is different. there is a major difference between, oh, I disagree with you on tax policy, and you think Biden's an imposter because the real Biden was killed. Those are not equivalent in any way. And there's a difference between a political disagreement and some of these delusional beliefs. Speaking of delusional beliefs, on the bonus show today, it looks like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is signaling that he would support a so-called don't say gay bill. It's been years since we've talked about these don't say gay bills, and they're vile. And we're going to talk about it. Also, a record 31 million Americans will be betting on the Super Bowl. Am I one of them? Most of you probably know the answer, but I'll answer it on the bonus show. And also, there is an 85 mile wide comet heading in our direction from the Oort cloud. Not going to hit Earth. I know that there are some people who, for the bonus show, they would do really dishonest things.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Right. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pretend maybe this comet is going to hit us. It's not, but it's an interesting story nonetheless. So all of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up now at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code WOW22 for a discount.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a once-over.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem. And one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now,
a major CNN investigation suggests U.S. soldiers opened fire on Afghan civilians last August after a massive suicide bomb blast outside the Kabul International Airport. CNN's report is based on interviews with survivors and doctors in Kabul who contradict a new Pentagon investigation.
There were absolutely no gunshot wounds. During the course of our investigation, we found no evidence that post-blast U.S. service members killed other U.S. service members or Afghans.
We'll speak with CNN's Nick Peyton Walsh, just back from Afghanistan. Then we'll talk to Congressmember Ro Khanna, whose district is in the heart of Silicon Valley. He has a new book, Dignity in the Digital Age, Making Tech Work for All of Us. We'll talk to him about his call for a wealth tax, what's next for Build Back Better, foreign policy, and the hearing he chaired this week calling out fossil fuel companies for failing to meet their pledges to reduce emissions.
As early as the 1970s, Exxon knew not only that climate change is real, but that its products, Exxon's products, were contributing to the climate crisis.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. More states have announced plans to relax public health measures as this winter's devastating Omicron wave of coronavirus infections continues to ebb unevenly across the United States. On Wednesday, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said he'll lift a statewide mask mandate for K through 12 schools at the end of February. Democratic governors in Illinois and Rhode Island also announced they'll roll back mask mandates for indoor public gatherings. Here in New York, Governor Kathy Hochul said the lifting of an indoor mask or vaccine mandate today marks a new phase in this pandemic.
Overall cases are down, positivity rates down, hospitalizations are down, cases per 100,000 are down, and new admissions are down. That is a beautiful picture. That may be one of my favorite slides. And vaccines and boosters are up in our hospital capacity. So, New Yorkers, this is what we've been waiting for.
On Wednesday, the U.S. reported nearly 3,600 new deaths from COVID-19. Hospitalizations remain high, but have dropped below September's peak of infections from the Delta variant. Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said Wednesday her agency is looking into updating and reviewing its guidance.
But at this time, we continue to recommend masking in areas of high and substantial transmission. That's much of the country right now in public indoor settings.
CDC data show more than 99% of counties across the United States are currently considered high risk for transmission. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, Congressional Black Caucus Chair Joyce Beatty says Republican Congressmember Hal Rogers of Kentucky poked her in the back and said, "Kiss my ass," after she asked him to wear a mask aboard the Capitol building subway system. Beatty said Wednesday she'd accepted Rogers' public apology, but said she felt she might have been treated differently if she were not a black woman. The White House accused Russia of escalating tensions Wednesday as an estimated 30,000 Russian troops begin 10 days of military drills in Belarus. Satellite